Okay. Welcome everyone. Thank you for being with us on Zoom this evening, and welcome to someone who's joining us tonight. Welcome to Seth, who's joining us here in person, and hopefully we'll be able to join together in here via Menu. Just ahead of time, I apologize. I just want to be transparent that I had very little time to prepare. I believe I prepared well enough to give the class, but I didn't get a chance to do the additional Rishonim and Chashuke Chemed that I know we've accustomed ourselves to. I just got back from a funeral for my Rebbe Reb Pendler, which was in Muncie, and they put speaker after speaker up there, and eventually I had to go myself to make it back for Mincha. So,
Who is it for? I'm sorry.
Rav Moshe David Tendler is in Sal.
Oh,
He spoke.
we
He spoke to our shul,
yeah,
actually.
yes. My condolences to you, Rabbi.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. So of course not that he needs our zechuyos. He has enough bifnei on his own, but we'll of course dedicate our learning in his memory tonight. And then God willing, on Shabbos, I'm hoping to collect some thoughts a little more, and I'll try to share it maybe between Mincha and Maariv during Shal Shuddos. But okay, let's get to it. Let's get to it. Okay, so we are on Chaf of an Aleph, that is 20a. But what I want to actually do, if we just remember to mute ourselves if possible. So what I want to do actually is, before we jump into 20a, Chaf Amud Aleph is really in middle of a sugya. So what we need to do is go back to the bottom of 19b, Yates Amud Beis, to the final section there. So I don't know what power it is, but it should be the final section in the art scroll, which starts with Amar Rav Asi. So here we go. Remember, our discussion revolves. Toby, welcome. Good to have you with us. Toby, this is Seth. Seth is Toby, our president. Okay, we have a zeman, so to speak, here now. Okay, so we're actually just recapping on 19b on Yud Tes Amud Beis. So we're talking about Maaser Sheni. Maaser Sheni again is produce that one brings up to Jerusalem. It's a tithe that one actually eats themselves, albeit it must be within Yerushalayim. So it's difficult. Imagine I live all the way somewhere in Akko. I live all the way in the north. I live all the way in the south. I was going to say Eilat, but Eilat might not actually be part of Israel from a halachic standpoint. So wherever I am, I'm in Be'er Sheva, and I have to haul all this produce up to Yerushalayim. So you know what God said? God says in the Torah, you know what you could do? You could be poda it. You could transfer its sanctity onto a bunch of coins. You'll take that money, and then you'll purchase food from vendors in Yerushalayim, thereby transferring the original sanctity from the Maaser Sheni to the coins, to the food that you're going to eat within Yerushalayim. Now, the question we start dealing with is, at what point am I liable if I eat Maaser Sheni outside Yerushalayim, outside of Jerusalem? So we always assumed that, well, any point, once I have Maaser Sheni and I eat it outside of Jerusalem, I'm guilty for doing that. However, Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav Yochanan, maybe about 10 lines up from the bottom. Amar Rav Yochanan, Maaser Sheni, Mamas Chayavanav, when would one be liable for eating it? Mishin I'm on my phone. It's a little difficult for me to press buttons and mute. If we could just remember to mute ourselves. Thank you. Okay. So once actually what has to happen first is the food needs to enter into Yerushalayim. Then you need to take it out. And only then, once you eat it outside, would you be held liable for doing that. And now, what's the reason? We gave an example last time. Remember, it's like that svara that if one doesn't go into the sukkah at all, then that's one thing. But for someone to go into the sukkah and say, I'm not really feeling it, and leave the sukkah for no good reason, that's almost like kicking in the face of God. So that was the analogy that we gave. For me to then bring the Maaser Sheni into Yerushalayim, I have the opportunity to eat it, and then I take it out. That's a bigger affront to God. One person can just say, I was too lazy to bring the food up to Yerushalayim. But here's a guy who actually made it to Yerushalayim and says, Aval Pekin, nonetheless, I'm going to take it out of Jerusalem and eat it. So that's a little bit more of a smack in the face. So that would presumably be the issue. Now, where do we see this? My time at Damar Kra lifting Hashem lekecha tochlenu uksiv lo sucha lecho bisharecha. It says that you should eat it before the Lord your God, and you shall not eat it in your residences outside of Yerushalayim. Kol yichad dekarina bei lifnei Hashem lekecha tochlenu karina bei lo sucha lecho bisharecha. Well, hey, yichad dola karina bei lifnei Hashem lekecha tochlenu lo karina bei lo sucha lecho bisharecha. Only once we can apply the verse that requires me to eat in Yerushalayim, meaning once I'm in Jerusalem, can we then tag on the verse that says, and you shall not eat it outside of Jerusalem. But until the point that you make it into Yerushalayim with the food, you would not be at least, now you'd miss out on the mitzvah, Meister Shani, but you wouldn't be liable, you wouldn't violate a prohibition of eating it outside of Jerusalem. However, Meisve, we have a contradictory brisa, a contradictory Tanyadic teaching. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Kohen Shalsa B'yodo Te'ina Shel Tevel. Let's say a Kohen has a fig that is Tevel. Tevel means, remember, you have to take off Truma, Meiser. These are all different kinds of gifts that you either have to give it to the Kohanim, to the Levium, to Tzedakah, to charity. And if you fail to take off all these different things that you're supposed to designate to these different parties, then your food is called Tevel and it's prohibited to eat it. It's not ready for consumption. So what's this guy, what's this Kohen going to do who wants to eat it? So what he's going to do is, Amar tenazu truma sub uksa, I'll designate truma at its stem, maiserishon bitzvona, the northern part, the upper part of the fig will be designated for maiserishon, maiser sheni lidroma, and the bottom part will be for maiser sheni. Vishnas maiser, v'hubi Yerushalayim. And so either it's the year of Meiser Sheni. Remember, Meiser Sheni is only first, second, fifth, and sixth year. And he finds himself in Jerusalem, where he's supposed to be. Oh, Meiser Ani. Or it's the third or sixth year where there is Meiser Ani. The tithe goes to the poor. Vuhu Bigvulin. And he could be outside of Jerusalem. Achla, if the Kohen eats such a food, Loka Achas, he gets only one pair of lashes. Why? What did he miss out on? Because after one take, so the Kohen is allowed to eat Truma. Truma goes to the Kohen. So if he wants to give it to himself, he can give it to himself. But the issue is, you're then supposed to take off Trumos Maisros, which is a tithe that goes to the Levium. So he's not a Levi, he's a Kohen, and he failed to do that. So therefore, he gets lashes for ignoring the Trumos Maisros. However, let's say a non-Kohen eats it, but now we're on Chafam and Aleph, we are on 28. Bizar sha'acha lo get shtayim. However, a non-Kohen who eats it gets two sets of malchus, the additional one being because he ate truma. If he eats truma, well, truma is reserved for Kohanim and their family members only. If I, Yisrael, want to eat truma, right, Zadie? If I eat your truma, I would be held accountable for that.
I wouldn't hold you accountable.
But God would. So it's you're very kind and merciful.
Right, but, you can come into my house and eat it.
If the way it works for Kohanim's children can eat it, but once, let's say, a woman who's a Bas Kohen, a Dwarf Kohen, gets married, right? Once mom got married to dad, she lost the right to eat Truma. So, but it was
worth it. That's the mistake your mother made.
That's a good thing she's not on the recording here, on the session here. So we'll leave this, but it is recorded. So we'll see if she ever goes through this and finds it. Anyway, so going forward, so he gets twice. Why? Now here's the interesting part. However, if you never designate anything, you'd only get Malchus lashes once because it's Tevel. And Tevel, even though it has all this latent energy in here, become different forms of designated special food, if you didn't separate anything yet, then you only get one set of malchus. Now, why do we bring this all up? Because the question is, time into Isa B'Yerushalayim, Babik Vulin Loka Shalosh. What do we see here? The Kohen only gets one set of lashes for eating Trumas Masros. Wait a minute. Why is he not getting lashes for eating Meiser Sheni? Because he's in Yerushalayim already. What's the implication, though? The implication is, Habigvulin, let's say he never went to Yerushalayim to begin with, he would still get malchus. Even though he didn't bring the food into Yerushalayim, he would still be held accountable for eating Meiser Sheni that was never brought to Jerusalem and eaten outside Jerusalem. Now, why is that the case? Well, why is that the case? The issue is that that contradicts the first statement we saw of Rabbi Yochanan, who posited that the food needs to enter Jerusalem first in order for the person eating it outside to be held accountable. So we have a contradiction here. How do we resolve it? So one suggestion is the Eili Ba'afke. No, you have to read between the lines. The case in this brisa assumes that the guy brought the food to Jerusalem first, and then he's eating it outside. You know, you just got to add, you got to add a few words in between. It's like what the art scrolls do over there, right? They give you the in between the lines over there. So you need to put the in between the lines. However, Ihachi Maila Meimra. But if so, there's no chiddush. There's no novelty to this brisa. I already know about the law. It assumes that in general, those studying Talmud know what Truma is, they know what Maaser Sheni is. There's no novel ruling that I would not have known about before reading this Braisa. What could this Braisa be telling me? If maybe the whole point of this Braisa is to teach me that I specifically don't need to enter Jerusalem. I can be already outside Jerusalem. I never come anywhere near Jerusalem, but I'm still chayv, I'm still liable for eating Maaser Sheni outside. Maybe that's the chiddush. Maybe that's a novelty of the brisa. That I don't even need to enter Yerushalayim, and I'll still be held liable for eating Maaser Sheni. And that would be a contradiction with Rabbi Yochanan, who says, no, you must enter Yerushalayim if you want to be held accountable. I mean, obviously, no one wants to do that. But from a halachic standpoint, that's what would need to happen. So we're going to give one final suggestion, number one. Then there's going to be an interlude in the Gemara to clarify it a bit. And then all the way at the end, two lines before we get to the next Mishnah, we will get a second suggestion. So just to map out the next section of the Gemara. Suggestion number one, what could be the novelty of the Braisa, but that could still maintain that one needs to enter into Yerushalayim first in order to be Chayiv on Maaser Sheni? Hachu Mayaskinan, here what are we dealing with? Kugodailinhu b'tivlayhu. This is the novelty he wants to teach us. Let's say you took Tevel, you didn't designate Maaser Sheni on it yet, and you bring it into Yerushalayim in a state of Tevel. And what's the Chiddush here? The Chiddush is that even though when this food entered into Yerushalayim, I hadn't yet designated any of it as Maaser Sheni, still, through a halachic lens, we see the latent energy of Maaser Sheni in there, and it's considered, from our perspective, that you brought Maaser Sheni to your Shalayim and took it out. Even though it wasn't yet designated Maaser Sheni, we know there's the latent Maaser Sheni energy in there, so to speak, and that's why I'm held accountable. The Chiddush of the Braisa isn't that I never need to enter your Shalayim. The novelty it's teaching us is rather, no, you do need to go into your Shalayim and then leave in order to be chayav and eating it. But what's the Chiddush? The Chiddush is that even if it went into your Shalayim, not in a state of Maaser Sheni, I'm still going to be held accountable for it. Beautiful. We found more ways to hold me accountable. Right? We always love that. Now, this principle is called Matano Shlo Hurmu, literally gifts. Gifts are what we designate from our food, Truma, Maaseros. These gifts, even if I haven't designated them, it's as if they are already predesignated. That's the principle we're going to pick apart here. The issue is, if we're going to hinge the whole answer and reconcile this with Rabbi Yossi or Rabbi Yochanan on this principle doesn't seem to be accepted by earlier rabbinic authorities. And in general, if your opinion doesn't comport with earlier rabbinic authorities, with precedent, you're in big trouble, because that's how halacha works. You can't contradict earlier authority. We have a contradictory brisa, right? Rav Yossi is an Amora. We have a brisa which is precedent a few hundred years earlier, which is binding that he needs to conform with, especially if all opinions fall in one direction. Rav Shimon Yehuda Omer, Mishum Rav Yossi, Lo Nechleku Beishamai. Also, okay, I mean, also the issue, so this is Reb Yossi we have here. It's Reb Yossi. Before we had Reb Asiya, I mixed up the names. The issues are Reb Asiya and Reb Yochanan. Now we're bringing Reb Yossi, the Tana. So, Reshim and Yehuda Omer Mishim Reb Yossi, Lo Nechleku Beishamai Ubeis Hillel, Al Pirshal Nigmar Malachton, Valver Yushalayim, Sheyifta Maiser Shein Shalhen, the Yocha B'chol Makom. So, the case we're not dealing with over here is, let's say I have food that the produce isn't even ready for consumption yet. So if you bring that to your shalim and take it out, you're not going to be chayiv on it because it's not really food yet. It's not ready for you to take off ma'aser sheni. However, let's say I bring food. I have food that's ready for me to take off ma'aser sheni. It's already gone through the process. I've already sifted. I've already like taken out all of the psoles, all of the residue in there. It's ready for me to bring to the next stage. And that's when I'm supposed to take ma'aser off of it. And I bring it to your shalim. Beis Shammai says, you have to go back and eat in your shalim. Okay, that's nice, but we don't hold like Beis Shammai. Beis Hillel omrim yifte v'yochel b'chol makom, that you need to eat it. Sorry, you need to redeem it. You can redeem it and eat it wherever you want. In other words, from the perspective of Beis Hillel, you bringing this food that's not yet designated as Ma'aser Sheni into Jerusalem is not problematic. It's you're still not chayav for eating it outside of Jerusalem, and more so, you could even be poda it, redeem it onto coins, and then bring those coins to Yerushalayim and eat it. So that's what Beis Shammai says. So the question is, though, if we want to posit that we view the Ma'aser Sheni as having entered Yerushalayim, even if you haven't pre-designated it, how could Beis Hillel over here treat this food as if it's never entered Yerushalayim? How do we reconcile that, right? So here's the answer. Amar Rabba mechitza lechol do raisa, mechitza liklot de rabbanon. V'chigazer, rabbanon, welcome, Melissa. V'chigazer rabbanon, ki isa be'ene, akisa be'ene, betavli lo gazer rabbanon. So here's the distinction. There's the question of me eating it outside of Yerushalayim, which is an issue that's de oraisa. And then there's a question of mechitza, which is bringing it inside. I think we have Rashi over here. Rashi gives an elaboration. No, he doesn't give us. Okay. But anyway, the idea here is that as far as rabbinic laws are concerned, if one has, if you don't have actual ma'aser sheni in front of you, if you only have food, you have tevel, it's not pre-designated. Since we're dealing with rabbinic issues, from a rabbinic perspective, we say, if you don't have literal ma'aser sheni right here in front of you, we're not going to start playing games saying, oh, but it's as if I see the ma'aser sheni somewhere in there. We don't play that game when it comes to rabbinic laws. So just to read it out loud over here, the explanation on that. So the idea is, Amar Rabbi Mechitza Lecho, Klomar Dinza She'im Nichnas HaMais Yerushalayim Chayav Me'ata Achilas V'Gvulen. Why would I be chayav on it if I brought the food into Yerushalayim? Because that's a D'oraisa issue. The issue of eating Ma'aser outside Yerushalayim is a D'oraisa. It's a biblical problem. But with Zeh Omer Shematan Shalom Hurma K'nishu Hurma. The Galim Nichlis Su Apiris B'Yosim Tevel, Da'i B'Zek Te'i Lechayav Achim Yekin Al Ma'aser Shiva Shkin Yochanan Mechus Yerushalayim. So what's the biblical issue at stake here? The biblical issue is me eating the ma'aser outside of Jerusalem. That is a biblical violation. As far as the biblical violation of eating ma'aser outside of Yerushalayim is concerned, we do see the latent ma'aser sheni there, even if it doesn't literally exist in front of us right now. However, mechitza liklot, I'll just finish this, we're almost at the Mishnah. But the question of, can I redeem Ma'aser Sheni onto coins? That is a rabbinic matter that we're dealing with over here. As far as rabbinic matters are concerned, we don't view the food as being there if it's not already designated. Therefore, how do we reconcile everything? So this is the summary. The way we reconcile it is that, why was Beis Hillel so permissive? Beis Hillel was very permissive because they were dealing with the rabbinic angle of this question. Can I transfer the sanctity of Ma'aser Sheni onto coins that already went to Yerushalayim? Answer is yes, because the transference of sanctity in this case is rabbinical. But as far as the question of me taking this food and eating it outside Yerushalayim, that's biblical in nature. And therefore, we apply the principle of Matan Shalom Hurma K'nishu Hurma Damyan. We view the Meistersching as already being there, even if I have not designated it yet. So that's the end of that section of the Gemara. But then that was all to get to answer number one. See that? I told you, we go a little bit down the rabbit hole. That was all to get to answer number one. Answer one, remember what was our issue? Our issue was we had Rav Yochanan who posited that food need, the Meistersching needs to first enter Yerushalayim, leave Yerushalayim for me to be chayev on. But then we said we had a brisa which seems to imply otherwise, because what could be the novelty of this brisa if not to teach me that I don't need to go into Yerushalayim, I can eat it outside Yerushalayim and I'll still be chayev. So we gave one answer, maybe to teach me the idea that I see the Meister Sheni as existing, even if it's not designated yet. The other answer is, remember we had a question last time about, let's say I'm inside Yerushalayim, I'm holding the Meister Sheni with a stick and it's outside Yerushalayim. Do we view the Meister Sheni as having entered into Jerusalem yet? Remember we had that question? We left it as a teiku. We left it unresolved. But now we're actually, we don't need to wait till Eliyahu HaNavi. We just needed to wait until the next page. Rabina Amar can go to Nakele Bekanya. The Tifshot, it's taught, what's the Chiddush of this Braisa? It's to teach me a case where I am inside Jerusalem, my food is outside Jerusalem, I'm holding it with a stick. The Tifshot by Rav Papa, and his answer is the question, Rav Papa, it's coming to teach me that I am Chayev on it. So long as I am not completely outside of Yerushalayim, I would be Chayev if I decided to eat the Meister Sheni in that place there, where it is being held outside of Yerushalayim. That's the Chiddush of the Braisa. Therefore, what is this all to get to? It's all to get to teach us that Rav Azi's position, that one needs to first bring the Meister Sheni into Yerushalayim to be chayev on it if they take it outside of Yerushalayim. So I know this part of the Gemara was a little bit convoluted, but on the bright side, for those who felt like we got our fill of Meister Sheni, we're done with Meister Sheni. I can't say forever, but, we say Hadron Aleph, we'll come back to it. But now we're going to talk about a completely different topic. The next topic, we're actually starting with the Mishnah. So this is a new topic, fresh start. Even if we didn't get anything that came beforehand, this is all brand new. Speaking for myself as well. All brand new. You know, you ever hear the term payas, right? Payas, like what you got over here? So maybe it's more like a Yiddishization of the word, but like comes from the word, I think, pa'as. So we're actually going to be talking about the issue, particularly for men, to be cutting and using a razor on themselves to take out their hair. Now, what's the issue of using a razor? So there's different issues behind it. There's actually two primarily we're going to deal with. One is just, if I want to use a razor to, I don't want to shave every few days. It's really tiresome. I want to just take a razor and get rid of it for a long time. So I can't do that in general. That's one category. Then there's something called a srita or los iskodu, which is causing myself a gash or lacerations. Why would I ever want to do that to myself, assuming I'm in my right mind? Well, people would do that out of anguish when they lose a loved one. And it actually wasn't just simply something people would do out of anguish, but it was prescribed by pagan religions that you were supposed to do that. So a lot of these rules actually are coming la fuke to basically to against, specifically to make us, to differentiate us from what the pagans did. So the pagans actually, I think if you go to Israel today, they call them arsim, which are like these Israeli kids that they basically shave like the sides of their head and they leave like it's like a little mohawk thing in the middle. It's a thing. They call them arsim. I'm not exactly sure I know what it means, but it sounds like a pejorative term. So that's basically what the pagans would do back then. They would shave off like the sides of their head and leave some hair and like locks down the middle. So
that's a mohawk.
Yeah, a mohawk, basically. But I think they also like left like braids down, coming down as well, but essentially a mohawk, Sadie. Yes, correct. So that's what we're going to be dealing with right now. So nothing to do with Meister Sheni, completely brand new topic. The two psukim I want you to look at, if you have the Torah or Hashalim on the sides, if those who have newer editions of Gemara, it actually gives us two psukim to start off with. So I want to look at the verses in the Torah first. If you don't have the Torah or Hashalim, you can look up Leviticus 21:5 by Yikra Chaf Aleph Hey, and Deuteronomy 14:1, Devarim Yudalad Aleph. So I'll read them out loud. Lo yikirhu karcha verosham. One shouldn't cause a karcha, basically, essentially a bold, make a bold spot on your head. Upaas zekanam, the edge of one's beard. Lo yigalehu uvivsaram lo yisutu sarat. So you shouldn't shave your beard. And you, as far as your flesh is concerned, you shouldn't lacerate yourself. That's one verse. Now, it's important to note it's in Leviticus, it's in Vayikra, which is dealing with the laws of the priests, of the Kohanim. This is going to be important in the Gemara. The next verse in Devarim, in Deuteronomy, is a general for all Jews. As you can see, Banim Atem LaAdonai LeHeichem, you are all children of God. Lo siskodidu, you shall not cause yourself a gash. Lo sisimu karcha bein einichem lemeis. You shall not cause a bald spot between you, between your eyes, for a dead person. So those are the two verses that I want to point out at the beginning. And essentially, there's going to be different diuk and different inferences that we're going to make from the choices of words used in these two verses. And you can see there's already similar terminologies being used. The term karcha, of making a bald spot, appears in both psukim. That's one thing to note. Also, you're going to see discrepancies between both psukim. And the Gemara is going to derive different ideas from both of them. So that's the general introduction. We'll jump into the Mishnah and that'll tell us more. Like you think, like kerach, like ice. Well, there is something called bal karcha with a kuf instead of a kuf, which is do something against somebody's will. So that maybe that's related, but yeah, different spelling, but it does sound the same.
Also, okay, korach. Korach.
Yeah, also korach. I'm sure there's some drush over there, right? Very good. All right, so let's go into the Mishnah. Korea karcha barosho, someone who causes a bald spot on his head. V'makif pa'as rosho, or one who removes the from the sides of his face. We'll define more what that is later. V'mashkis pa'as zikno, or the payas of his beard. V'has sorate srita achas alameschai, or one who causes himself lacerations due to the death of someone, he gets malchus for that. It's a little bit ironic, right? Because you just gave yourself some lashes and you're getting lashes for it. But that is the din. Also, just it doesn't say in the Mishnah, but Rashi points it out. Hakorea karcha barosho, one who bolds himself, also that's a practice they did for the dead to show anguish. So for hakorea karcha barosho, causing the bold spot, would be an issue for that, and being sorate srita achas al mace, and lacerations would be an issue if done for mace. Now there's a separate issue that you bring up, Toby, which is being chovel as atzmo. You see, there's a whole question that comes up: is someone allowed to go paintballing, or is someone allowed to play extreme sports where you'll sustain injuries? So the issue is, right? So we know a person is not, our souls don't belong to us; they belong to God. We're not allowed to give up our souls. Unless we're mandated to. So the question that comes up is one's body as well. One is not supposed to cause damage to my body. It's not like my body, my choice. I can just choose to give myself lacerations. My body belongs to God as well.
Right. So just the issue of bald spots is it's qualified, at least in the art school, by in mourning for a dead person.
Right. So,
is that you make a bald spot, which is not technically harming yourself?
So if it's not in, like, you know, we're going to talk about, like, you know, the beard, the payas area, you know, if it's like just the top of your head over here or this area, it would be subject to that, I believe, because that's not the payas. So if I bolded myself over here.
No. But you're not doing it in morning.
Yeah. Then I would not be accountable for that. Yeah.
If you're doing it for the morning of the day, you know.
Oh, no, if you not, specifically you do it because that's what the pagans did in their practices. I mean, I think that's the explanation that sits with me the best. Otherwise, it seems very arbitrary. It seems that's what the pagans practice.
I guess the whole thing is, if you know better,
yeah,
and you do it anyway, even if you make an excuse, you're guilty.
Right, because so a general important principle, Exactly. So we're going to talk about in the Gemara, we're going to rehash an idea that, again, in order to get malchus, to get punished by the Jewish court, there needs to be witnesses, and the witnesses actually need to give you hasra. They need to warn you before you do whatever is prohibited. And so basically, this is what the scenario would be. You have two witnesses. I say, okay, I'm going to give myself a bold spot because of my anguish of this person who died. I say, don't do it. If you do this, the Beis Din, the Jewish court, will give you lashes, they'll give you malchus. And you say, I don't care what Beis Din is going to do, I'm going to do it anyway. Then, in that specific case, is when someone incurs lashes. So you have to be like very lahachis, as we call it. It'd be very like, you know, do it in spite of knowing what the halacha is and being informed, literally.
So second. Do it in spite, knowing what, like, you're very strong about it, it's acceptable.
Oh, no, the opposite.
It's not acceptable.
Oh, yeah, specifically would not be acceptable. Because you're doing it basically, you were literally a few seconds earlier just told not to do it. And you're like, I'll peek and I'm going to do it anyway. So there's a, yeah, so very good. But thank you for helping me clarify that. So let's go through the Mishnah. Saratsrita Achas Achamisha Mason. Let's try to cover some ground. Saratsrita Achas Achamisha Mason. Let's say I last year myself just once due to five people who died. Uchamesh Sritos Amis Echad, or I last year myself five times due to one person passing away. I am liable for each and every one. So I'd be liable five times in either scenario. Now let's talk about the areas. God willing, again, I came back like literally half an hour before Mincha, so I didn't have time to find it. But next time, if you hold me to it, I want to bring in a diagram. You actually, if you go like Kew Garden Hills or Five Towns, you go to the barbershops there that serve Jews, they actually will have posters up there that show you where the payas starts and ends, different shitos, different opinions of where it is. I actually have in my Masifta Gemara over here. I don't know if they give it to me in art school. You know, I have like already a few diagrams over here of different opinions in Rishonim where the payas start and where they end. You know, and then they tell you that you shouldn't use less than a 2 on the sideburns. So again, the idea is that we don't want to uproot the hair. That's why, you know, it's actually better to get usually a cheaper shaver than a more expensive shaver, because the cheaper shavers don't work as well. The more expensive shavers tend to like really get under the surface and pull out the hairs from their roots. We don't want to uproot the hairs. We just want to trim the hairs down with like a scissor. So the cheaper shavers, maybe more expensive ones do it also, they tend to just cut the hair closely, but they don't uproot the hair. Uprooting the hair is, razors in general, that's what they do. But I think even some shavers have special, more sophisticated technology.
It's the Norelco. You know, the Norelco shaver had the lift and cut technology.
Right, the lift and cut, that's what it's called.
The lift and cut technology.
Very good. So Sandy's pointing out, like, it's more sophisticated for it to do. It's generally, when you get like the $20 Phillips shaver that I have, it's not sophisticated enough to do that. And then some people, you know what they do actually, is they dull the blades on there as well, so it doesn't go so deep. And then some posts can think that's ridiculous and you're going too far. And actually, Rabbi Chaim Jachter, who's the rabbi who checks our Erev, huge Talmud Chacham, he and his son actually literally just put out a mini book literally on the topic of shaving, the halachos and practical applications. So if you want to know more about it, that's your address to go to. Okay. So the good thing, by the way, of like living here in Stanford, going to barbers, is that I go to, I think it's called the Wood Street Barber, and they're really great. They're not Jewish, but they have enough Jewish customers. Like, oh yeah, I know like so-and-so from a good shalom. They come all the time. It's like, I could tell them like, yeah, don't cut the sideburns, the cheekbone. They know what I'm talking about. But the beauty is that unlike in the Five Towns and in Queens, where right before the 3 weeks, or before Sphira, everybody is like, you have lines outside the stores. When you live in a predominantly non-Jewish area and then you have non-Jewish barbers, you don't have those intense lines right before Sphira in the 3 weeks. So it was really nice. I'm like, oh no, I didn't go in advance enough to beat the rush before those times. And then I realized, oh wait, there's like no one here, because this is a non-Jewish neighborhood that happens to have Jews in it. It's not like Far Rockaway where the Jews rule the entire world.
I get my hair cut down in Queens. I go at a certain time.
Yeah.
And no one's there.
Oh, well, I never
don't know what to do.
See, I lived in Kew Garden Hills, and I didn't know what I was doing. So I should have taken your, if only I knew your advice.
Well, I got you.
Are you saying that Norelco shavers and other advanced shavers actually pull the hair out by the roots? They twist it up and cut it deeper.
I think the lifting tends to take the roots out. I need to look more into myself, so you know, Norelco is perfect. Norelco is perfect.
I couldn't understand why you said that the sound was
perfect. Norelco is perfect. So the right is the right way. This is the right way. You can still feel some stubble. Okay, so you know what? I'll have to look more into it.
We couldn't hear you, Rabbi. We couldn't hear you.
Oh, can you hear me now?
No, something happened to the sound.
But do you hear me now?
Not really.
No?
Let's see what we can do over here. Okay, I'm muted. Now better? Still not good?
No, it just dipped out.
Just dipped out.
Tap it a little. Maybe just tap.
We can hear you, but you sound like you're far away.
Oh, the phone's literally right in my face, though. That's so odd. I'm not sure. You know what? Sometimes when I get a cold in the middle, that happens. But I don't see a cold.
No, it's coming in and out. It's fading. It's fading in and out.
All right. I'm still working on the Wi-Fi here at the shul. I'm on my data right now. Should I try Wi-Fi? Let's see what happens. Maybe the Wi-Fi is better. You know what? I'm going to try switching over to Wi-Fi, and we'll see if the shul Wi-Fi is better. This is Galaxy, Samsung Galaxy. No, it's Verizon. Yeah, that's the problem. Okay, are we back?
Yes.
Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem. Okay, good. So let's go for it. Okay, again. God willing, I'll bring the diagrams next time, and I'll try to get you some of the shaver information. And there's a good discussion. You know, the same way some of these kosher companies, they go crazy on certain bug checking procedures, which might be over the top. There's a similar discussion to be had about shavers as well. So I'll try to look into that information, God willing, next time when I have more than 30 minutes to get this together. So, okay, let's go through the Mishnah. Where are we up to? Al harosh shtayim, achsmikan. On the head, there are two areas, one side and the other side, that I'm not allowed to shave off. Al zakan, on the beard area, shtayim mikan, shtayim mikan. There's a beard area on the top and a beard area toward the bottom. Va'achas melmat, and one below. Those are the areas I'm not allowed to shave off. And I'll try to get you a diagram so you can visualize it better. Rabbi Eliezer Omer in Nitlu Kulan Ka'achas, Eno Chayv El Achas. Rabbi Eliezer says if you take all of them off in one shot, Bavas Achas, at the same time, you're only Chayv once. Why? Because you did one action. If you did it all in one fell swoop, then you're only held accountable once. That's Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. Okay, now we're going to get to the shaver part. Ve'enu chayv ad sheitz lenu b'ta'ar. What's that? A what?
A razor. 28.
20. Okay. So someone just asked for a page. Yes, correct, Phyllis. That is a razor. When is one chayv? When one uses a razor. However, Rabbi Eliezer, which is minority opinion, we don't like him, Omer, afil lucked b'milkat over a hitzni chayav. If you use any of these devices, then you would still be chayv, even though they're not razor, not strong as a razor. Now, I'm curious, what do they give you as a translation in the article for these two words?
A plane.
A plane and a...
A razor, one, and a plane, the other. Oh,
Ta'ar is a razor. They have malakit and a rehitni. So, okay, so Rashi gives us definitions, I believe. Where was Rashi? Rashi gets definitions. No?
The only other English here is plain.
Right. She's right.
Okay, Rashi doesn't, but I have over here. So I'll tell you what they are. Malaki is Milkachayim Shalokim Hem Seyar. So these are I think referring to tweezers. Oh no, it's not tweezers. Sorry, not tweezers.
It's in the footnotes.
So these are devices like that might not even be used for one's hair. Rehitni is something that's used to smooth out wood. So even though it's a device that is not normally used for one to cut their hair, but if you use it to smooth down your face, that would also be problematic, according to Rabbi Eliezer. But again, the general principle is razors are problematic, but using something like Nisparim, using scissors, which cuts it short, but doesn't remove it completely, that would be permissible.
There's a mention here in the footnote about Rambam talking about tweezers. I would imagine tweezers
So Malachi's tweezers.
Yeah, Safari says tweezers.
Oh, okay, good. Okay, good. So thank you for confirming this. Yes, tweezers.
So that would not be permissible, right? Because that would pull it all together.
Well, Rabbi Eliezer is saying is that, right, that would be problematic as well. So that would be Rabbi Eliezer's position, and we will, I suppose, elaborate on that more in the Gemara. Okay, very good. Let's go forward. Tanu Rabbanan. Okay, so remember we brought in two psukim. We brought in one in Vayikra, which is talking about Kohanim. We brought in one in Devarim, talking to everybody. First, we'll focus on the Kohanim. Tanu Rabbanan. Lo yikruchu. It says lo yikruchu. You shall not cause a bald spot. Yachu afilu karach arba v'chamesh krichos. I would think to say, had I not had this word in the pasuk of lo yikruchu, I would think that even if I bolded myself four or five times, I'd only be chayiv once. Tamalomar karcha, why say karcha? Lechayiv al karcha v'karcha. To that word in the pasuk karcha implies that I should be chayiv for each and every single karcha, right? Because the verse all I had to say was lo yikruchu. You shall not cause a bald spot. Why is it lo yikruchu karcha? Karcha is superfluous. The fact that Torah gives us a seemingly superfluous word comes to teach me something that's not obvious, which is that I'm chai for each and every karcha, each and every bald spot that I make. Berosham. What about the word berosham in the verse? What does that come to teach me? Berosham teaches me, referring to the head, matam alomar. That one shall not place a karcha between their eyes, meaning up here. That's what we say, like bein einecham for tefillin also. It doesn't mean literally between your eyes. It means up here, positioned longitudinally between your eyes. So what does that come to teach me? I would think leichayv for the area that's between the eyes. How do I know that leichayv on shaving, I'm making a bald spot on any section of the head. Tamid Lomar, Berosham, the Rabbis call Berosham.
Happened again. The sound went off again.
Is this a problem for everyone? No one can hear?
Oh, terrible.
Can anyone hear? All right, well, let me take the opportunity to make my plug. Come join us in person if possible, because as of now, I don't have a more sophisticated device than my phone. My laptop's even worse. So I appreciate everyone joining on Zoom, but you can see the limitations that we have. Or if anyone wants to sponsor a sophisticated teleconference communication device for the shul, you could put it into my discretionary fund, and
now you're on again.
Okay.
Hey, everything's fine, Rabbi. You're back on.
Okay. Okay, so who's sponsoring the special teleconference device that we're going to use here at the shul?
We don't need it. It's fine.
Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem. So Tavolom Baroshim Lerabos Kol Roshim include all of one's head. I Ve'Einli Ela B'Kohanim. But all these laws seemingly only apply to Kohanim. Where do I get Shariba and Akasim Misiseras? Now it makes sense. Look, Kohanim have to do all sorts of extra things, right, Zaini?
Nazir.
Right. Yes. A nazir would be an example of someone who has extra things. But a kohen is someone who has extra mitzvos. And so it makes sense. Look, Zadie, right? So you get truma, but there's a payoff. The reason you get truma is because you have more mitzvos than I do, right? You can't go into the cemetery and get yourself tameh over there. So there's a trade-off. You have extra restrictions, you get extra benefits. That's how it works. So it makes sense for Kohan to have extra restrictions. I can understand that they might have extra restrictions when it comes to bolding themselves. Yisrael Minayan. Well, where do I know that Yisrael also, Yisrael Elam also have this prohibition? So Nemar Khan Karcha and Nemar Alam Karcha. So if you look in both Psukim, one in Vayikra, one in Devarim, each of them use the word Karcha. Ah, so what do we have here? What's it called? A Gezer Shava. When you have two words in two different contexts, that's the same word essentially. It's to teach us that we're supposed to make analogous rules between the both of them. Mal and Chayav al Kol Karcha v'Karcha v'Chayav al Rosh Kibinei Naim. Afkan Chayav al Kol Karcha v'Karcha v'Chayav al Rosh Kibinei Naim. Just as Kohanim are Chayav on making a bolt spot on the entire head, or you're Chayav for each and every one, so too non Kohanim. And now it works both ways. Mal and Ames Afkan Ames. And just like we have this qualification that needs to be done due to the death of a loved one, so too here, so too not just Yisraelim, but Kohanim as well will be held accountable only when it's done al hames. That brings the end of that section of Gemara. Let's just get one last little piece.
Moshe, yes. My understanding is that the reason the Kohanim are compensated the way we are is because we can't have regular sources of income. We can't hold a regular job. We're working in the temple, and so the public supports us, which is our compensation for what we do for them.
Wow, it sounds like you're like a government worker, right? It's like we give like our tax dollars to pay the federal government.
Well, I get paid directly. I don't get paid by the government.
No, but yes, Sadie, your explanation I think is the correct one. Until December 3rd, right? Well, so we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. The great shutdown is on the horizon. Okay, Hani Dala Behe Krichos Hechi Dami. So we're on the bottom, last line of 28. So Hani Dala Behe Krichos Hechi Dami. Remember, we talked about how you're chayev for each and every time even if you do four or five boldings all in one shot, you're going to be held accountable five times. Well, what's the case? It's very obvious. They don't need to tell me this. I know if I get warned, they say, don't do this. Then I do it. And they say, don't do it again. I do it again. Don't do it again. I do it again. So yes, obviously I'll be chayav for each and every one because I got hasra. I was warned before each and every time. So that can't be what the Mishnah is coming to teach me. The issue is the other extreme is, but if I'm only warned once, I can only be held accountable for the first time I bolt myself. If I bolt myself a few times afterwards, I need additional hasros. And it'd be, right, let's say I'm, for instance, say I'm murdering multiple people. I need to be warned before each person that I murder in order for me to be held accountable for that. That's none. And now, Phyllis, right, you brought in Nazir. Nazir shall show the yayin kol yom, chayv la achas. Amr lo atish al tishtev hu shose chayv la kol achas va'achas. So this is the case that that we have in Nazir. It'll come up very soon in the Mishnayos. Our Friday crew already saw this, that if I'm a Nazir takes a vow of Naziris that he cannot drink wine and he cannot become Tamei Mace and he doesn't cut his hair. So if I'm about to drink wine, I'm a Nazir, I'm about to drink wine. And then I get warned, don't drink, I drink. You say, don't drink again, I drink again. Then I'm chai for each and every single time I drink. But if they say, don't drink, and I drink once and I'm drinking the entire day afterwards, I'm still only chayef one time because I only got warned once. So it's a case we'll get to very soon. So then if so, what could possibly be the case where I'm chayef for each and every time I cause myself a bold spot, even if I'm not getting warned multiple times? So here's the case. What would have been a havmina? Lo tzricha, the sach hamesh etzba'osa b'nasa, you take your fingers, you put them in some sort of chemical that could basically bold yourself. The chemical just bolds your hair, whatever. It's like acid, basically. You put it on your hair and it bolds you forever. So I get warned once and I dip my five fingers into this acid and I go like this to my head and I get five different spots. then I'm chayav for each and every one. I have my chayav, only got hasra once. Well, I only actually did one action, but it was one action that had five sinful results. And therefore, the hasra could cover the single action, but I still get five sets of malchus because the result was five different bold spots that I did. So that is the Gemara in a nutshell. Again, I want to thank everyone for being with us. And Seth, welcome. Good to have you with us for the Gemara tonight. Also want to acknowledge Sandy and Andrew. Thank you for joining us. I'll have to admit, this wasn't the best week from my own performance standpoint for you guys to be joining, but I appreciate you coming nonetheless. In general, what I try to do is go through the Gemara, and then we actually have, we bring Rav Zilberstein, who has interesting, more contemporary halakhic questions that relate to the Gemara. So that's the Hashem, especially with this sugya, I'll try to bring in more of the contemporary halakhic issues next time, but thankfully, we got to a new topic. We're done with Meiser Sheni for now. I miss Meiser Sheni already. I see, Toby, you don't miss it. But this should be very interesting from a halakha l'maisa standpoint. So thank you all for joining. Again, just dedicating this learning in memory of Rav Tendler, Zichron Levracha. And God willing, we should share B'Sor Tovos.
Amen. All right. Thank you, Rabbi.
This is interesting than the regular Mako.
I'm okay. I'm glad it suits your fancy. We'll make it for what it's worth.